those who have and those who will. How to answer none of the above. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Arrow News. Welcome into this Arrow News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot. We're here for our Monday chat on safety issues, and we're going to talk about one of the topics here that is known by one of its old sayings, and that is, there are those who have and those who will. We're talking about gear-up landings, but not just gear-up landings, all the other things that can go wrong in those last few seconds before you land an airplane back on the ground. Bob, thanks for joining us today.
As always, Paul, it's my pleasure.
All right, let's talk about your writings in the November issue of Over the Airwaves called, under the title, Bad Things Happen to Good Pilots Too. Now, you talk about that classic situation where someone's coming into land, gets distracted, forgets to put the gear down. There are other things that can go wrong in these circumstances. People forget to reconfigure the trim for the go-around, or they forget to, you know, set the flaps properly and wind up coming in too fast, or there's any number of things that can go wrong there. We have, within our ability, the opportunity to create a sterile cockpit environment up to a point. But one of the things I found most interesting about the anecdote you related was that there are times when there's just no getting around the increased workload. When somebody, you know, when ATC comes on the radio or something, you may not just be able to shut all that out. Let's start by talking about this story that happened just a few days ago at an airport near Buffalo, New York.
I was just reading some email yesterday, and somebody had sent out the local EAA chapter had sent out some photos of an aircraft that landed with its gear up at a neighboring airport. And I looked closely at the airplane, and I said, I know that airplane. And I looked even closer, and I looked at the tail number, and I said, I know the pilot. And I knew the pilot to be a very good pilot and a very good friend. And so I picked up the phone yesterday, and I called him, and I said, what happened? He says, you must be referring to my gear-up landing the other day. And I said, yeah, it's on the Internet. I'm getting email. What happened? And he, without pausing, said, well, let me tell you what happened. And then I'm waiting for this long explanation of, you know, what happened and excuses. And he said, Bob, I forgot to put the gear down. I said, well, I know that. That's evident from the pictures. But what really happened? And he says, you didn't hear me. I forgot to put the gear down. Certainly there must have been something going on. And then he went in to relate. And he says, I'm going to tell you what happened, but I don't want this to sound like I'm making excuses. I forgot to put the gear down, he said. But what was happening was he was making an approach to the airport, a tower-controlled airport, and he was running his pre-landing checklist. And in the middle of his pre-landing checklist, the controller came on the air and called him and said something about sidestepping to a parallel runway or talking to another pilot who was about to land on his runway. And he said it diverted my attention right to when I got to the second letter of my pre-landing checklist, which most of us know as GUMPS, G-U-M-P-S, gas, undercarriage, mixture pump, prop, seat belts, that sort of thing. He interrupted me just as I was getting to the undercarriage part, and I went right on by that, and then that's what happened. And I said, I said to myself, if it could happen to him, it could happen to me. And it could happen to any one of us. And we went on to talk about the distractions that can occur at any point of a flight that can cause us to miss something. I've oftentimes admonished my friends who attempt to interrupt me when I'm doing a pre-flight check on my airplane. You know, I'll be walking around following a list of standard check items, and somebody will walk up to me and say, "Hey, Bob, how are you?" And I'm in the middle of a pre-flight. Well, of course, we have to be courteous, but, you know, that's a chance to miss something.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked a little bit further, and I had related to him something that a flight instructor, my personal instrument instructor, had told me many years ago. He says, Bob, in any airplane you fly, the last two words you should be saying out loud in the cockpit, just as coming over the numbers of the runway, the last two words you should be saying is gear prop, gear prop. Now, for those of us, for pilots who fly retractable airplanes or airplanes with constant speed props, we want that prop full forward, and the prop control right to the wall,
mm-hmm.
and we want the gear down, the prop in anticipation of a possible go around, and the gear down for obvious reasons. And I said to my friend, I said, did you ever hear that admonishment, gear prop? He says, no, I never have. And I says, well, I'm sure it saved my butt many times, because most of my recent flying has been in fixed gear airplanes. You know, I do a lot of training in Cessna 172s and in other aircraft like that. They're all fixed gear, and I'm flying less and less in my 210, and I'm constantly concerned about when I get in the 210, will I remember to put the gear down?
Right, right.
So I think there are memory aids that we can use, even as simple as gear prop, to remind us at that final moment to be sure that the most important things are taken care of before setting down on the runway.
I'm going to share a tip that maybe even in your experience, Bob, you hadn't heard of before. I knew a guy, or met a guy, I should say. I didn't really get to know him too well, but he had this great trick. He was had a hangar at one of the small airports where I trained, and when someone would walk up to him during a pre-flight, he had ready to go in his back pocket, laminated, a checklist that he would hand to casual onlookers and say, here, Frank, help me with this, will you? And he'd hand him a checklist that had things like, checking door alignment, or, yeah, or, you know, checking for proper wax on leading edge, you know, just things that were totally inconsequential and couldn't cause any problem, but would actually involve this person in something long enough for him to finish the real pre-flight.
Great idea. A great idea. You know, I don't know how to do that in any kind of a courteous fashion, but I'll do it with students. I'll send a student out and have him pre-flight the airplane. And then about the point where he's getting to someplace like checking the flaps or checking the aileron movement, I'll walk up to him and say, hey, listen, what are you doing after this flight? And if he engages me in a conversation, I'll gently remind him that he should really say, stand by, let me get with you in a second, I got to finish this pre-flight.
Yeah.
Just to instill the notion that we are creatures of habit, and if that habit pattern is broken by any reason, then we have a problem. And I think that is the reason behind the sterile cockpit that's used in the airlines and in many corporate operations. We have to recognize that we can be easily distracted.
Well, Bob, we are going to be distracted for just a moment by this break, but when we come back, you wrote in the latest edition of Over the Airwaves about frontal movements during this time of year and the possibility for icing conditions. I want to talk a little bit about that. Bob Miller is my guest. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Do you feel stimulated? Hey, that's why Congress passed the Economic Stimulus Act of 2008, so loyal Americans like yourself would feel stimulated to help rev up the economy by spending money on important stuff like new Garmin avionics. We're talking potential tax incentives, bonus depreciation up to 50% in first-year cost allowances for qualified business use equipment purchases. See your tax advisor for guidance and your Garmin dealer for one whale of a stimulus package. It's almost like your patriotic duty, huh? Garmin, follow the leader.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot. We're going to talk about something that is a matter of great interest and concern in the middle latitudes of the Northern Hemisphere at this time of year as we get into this point in the season. And that is frontal movements and the increased potential that we could find ourselves encountering ice or freezing rain. Bob, tell us what makes this particular time of year different from other times of year in terms of the movement of fronts, and what are we really watching for?
Temperature. In a word, temperature. When we're in the middle of a summer or in the middle of the winter, typically fronts have constant temperatures, or temperatures very close to each other. And certainly both temperatures in the winter, in the summer, are going to be above freezing. In the winter time, we have fronts that may have temperature variations, but in the dead of winter, certainly up here in the northern climes, the temperatures on both sides of that front are below freezing. But when we have season change, particularly in the fall and in the spring, where the temperature gradients are hovering around freezing, anytime we pass through a front, particularly say, for example, a cold front sliding under warm air, we have a very high probability of a temperature inversion. And when there's moisture associated with that temperature inversion, as often there is along a front, we have warm air producing warm rain aloft, and that warm rain slides down through the front and then hits the cold sub-freezing area just below, and that freezing rain, that warm rain turns either into freezing rain or something called SLD, super large droplets, that are super cold droplets, which are really droplets of water that are below freezing still in liquid form that can cause a very serious icing condition on the airplanes.
Well, and it occurs to me, too, that at this time of year, when you have an inversion where you have warm rain above falling through cold air, it may also be that your back door is above you, and that is counterintuitive to some people.
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. I was having a discussion with one of my students today who's contemplating purchasing a turbocharged airplane here in the East, and he met a colleague, a more experienced aviator, who was trying to talk him out of the turbocharged airplane, saying it's really kind of unnecessary in the East because we do not have mountains that we have to use that turbocharging capability to climb over. Well, what that experienced pilot was missing was an understanding of what we're talking about here, where the back door most assuredly is going to be up. And when we're making a frontal passage or traversing a front, say, at 12,000 feet, and we're starting to pick up freezing rain or heavy icing or severe icing, where we need to go up, unless we have that capability of going up, as would be made possible by turbocharging, our only out then would be to go down, and that may not be a viable option.
Well, and frankly, you can find yourself in situations if you fly in bad weather where just having that extra horsepower available, even if it's only a 1 minute or 3 minute rating, could save your bacon.
Well, yes. Certainly when you're carrying a load of ice, that is certainly the case. But I've been in circumstances on numerous occasions where I've gone through and had to traverse a front and then all of a sudden got an encounter with moderate to severe icing and solved the problem almost immediately by going up just 1,000 feet, because that water, the warm water falling through the front, there's only a very narrow altitude range where those water droplets are super cooled, still in liquid form, or freezing rain where that, in fact, is sticking to the airframe of the airplane. That only occurs within about 500 to 1,000 feet, because below that, the temperatures are such that freezing rain sets up into pellets where they cannot adhere to the airplane, or the super cooled water droplets actually form ice pellets as well. So it's only a narrow range where we get this severe icing altitude-wise, and believe me, and 9 times out of 10, a climb to just 1,000 feet above will get you back into that warmer air and out of the ice. And you need to have that horsepower to be able to do that. But the point of we were making in terms of why fronts are so important is when we do fly in the wintertime, it's easy to know where those fronts are. We have surface analysis charts that are very, very accurate. That a careful study in the pre-flight planning process will make us very clearly aware of whether or not we will be traversing a front moving from point A to point B. And if there is a front along our path, and we do not have the capability in our airplane, we might best wait it out before thinking about going on that particular day.
Well, in that same vein of thought, Bob, you mentioned that a freezing rain encounter is an emergency, pure and simple. We must escape immediately. An awful lot of people seem to ignore that advice.
And here again is my reason for advocating any way we can do it, getting some competent training in icing conditions. People don't realize, I don't believe, just how serious freezing rain and or severe icing can be. Just imagine, if you will, standing at the end of your driveway when the snowplow comes by and just dumps, you know, 3 feet of snow right on your freshly paved or freshly shoveled driveway. That's just about how bad it can be. And I've seen it probably 3, maybe 4 times on the 210, where, I mean, you just can't wait. It's just an instantaneous, almost before pushing the mic button, you change altitudes and in most cases go up and then advise ATC. And one thing I'd like to say on behalf of ATC, leastwise here in the East, if we say the word ice, we will stop the conversation on the radio. Everybody will listen up, and ATC will say, say intentions. That's usually their response, say intentions, and then we have to be ready with a plan. We can't ask ATC, hey, listen, I'm picking up ice. What do you suggest I do? That is definitely the wrong response. You have to have a plan, and you just tell ATC this is what you're doing. They have a responsibility to clear the air, to clear the airspace in front, above, or below. And I want to point out, it's not required that we voice the word emergency. There's nothing wrong with saying it, but we do not have to put the word emergency over the airways for one to exist. An emergency exists any time, any moment, where the outcome of a particular phase of flight is uncertain. And if it's uncertain, even for a couple of moments while the aircraft is being coated with ice, that indeed is an emergency and should be regarded as such.
Well, and something we haven't talked about here is don't be afraid to file a PIREP.
This is something that I'm a little bit concerned about right now. There's some talk in the industry that ATC has been encouraged by the FAA to take a much more proactive enforcement role with regard to pilot mistakes and blunders. This is something that Jeff Van West, the editor of IFR Magazine, addressed in his November issue of IFR Magazine in the editorial, that should the day come when ATC, when air traffic controllers are being asked to perform an enforcement role, that's the day that PIREPs will stop.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, they do not perform an enforcement role. Their job is to separate traffic. So I've never hesitated to issue a PIREP, whether I'm in an aircraft certified for flight into known icing conditions or not. If I'm getting ice, I speak up and tell ATC that. And then that oftentimes becomes a topic of conversation between controllers and other aircraft crews, that ice has been reported at 4,000 or 6,000 feet, the type of ice, the temperature they encountered, and this is all great information to help the rest of us in the national airspace system be prepared.
Now, this reminds me of cases recently in Brazil and Spain where things have gone wrong regarding airliners, and pilots are being charged with criminal offenses before there's even a definitive investigative report issued. And, you know, we're getting into an area here where if ATC is charged with ratting on pilots, two things will happen. Pilots will not report icing because they don't want to take the chance of being, accused of going into it when they should not have. And there'll become this kind of unspoken understanding among pilots that you don't report ice because then the guy behind you will then, be charged with having flown into it.
This is a kind of a ludicrous scenario that we're painting here. ATC is the second or third member of our cockpit crew. And if I'm flying with a crew member who I fear is going to blow me in for every blunder that I make, the level of trust between me and that crew member or me and the ATC is just totally defeated. If we want to have a safe national airspace system, we've got to be in an environment where we have a trusting relationship between the people that we're working in. I don't mean, keeping secrets. Mm-hmm. I mean we have to have a system whereby if a pilot makes a mistake, the job of the controller is to help rectify that problem, and assuming nothing of consequence happens, let's just get on with the day's business. ATC has enough responsibility just keeping us separated from one another. To add the burden of blowing us in if we make mistakes, that's a whole subject that I don't think we want to go in that direction.
Yeah, I think it complicates their job as well as our job. Well, Bob,
yes.
As always, we appreciate these thought-provoking Monday conversations. We'll catch you again next week.
Thanks, Paul. My pleasure as always.
My guest has been Bob Miller. You can find out more about Bob at overtheairwaves.com. And you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.